This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Cherry Hill Volvo is honored to sponsor the Rich Zeoli podcast. We thank Rich for informing and entertaining all of us. Rich Zeoli, 1210 Talk Radio and Cherry Hill Volvo, an absolutely amazing team.
All right, I'll tell you what, I really miss this guy right about now as I'm suffering under the tyranny of Governor Phil Murphy, the king. I really miss this guy a lot. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Governor Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey. How are you, sir?
Doing great this morning, Rich. How are you?
Well, I'm living under a tyrant, and so I'm not in a good mood because he's going to raise my taxes again. He's going to raise all kinds of taxes. So why don't you come back and run? I mean, I know you're still here, but why don't you run for governor again? Can you do that?
I could do that. You know, it's only a two consecutive term limitation. So I could. But, I think that, he'll give a speech today that will once again clearly show people that he is a taxer, a spender, and a borrower.
Yeah, and a great point you made the other day, which is that, it's amazing this guy will have you wait in line at the DMV for 8 hours and then, tell you you can't vote in person.
Yeah, it's extraordinary that he can't. That's safe. It's not a public health risk to stand in line at the MVC. It's not a public health risk to stand in line to try to figure out your unemployment check problem that people have been waiting weeks, some people months for. But it is a public health risk that necessitates having to send out, 4 to 5 million ballots in the mail. And let's face it, Rich, you and I understand this a lot better than most of your listeners, I suspect. The county clerks in each one of our counties are not going to be ready or prepared to be able to do something with a deluge of votes like that. They don't have the equipment to scan those ballots. You're talking about, in the typical New Jersey election, you'll have anywhere from 100 to 200,000 absentee ballots total across the state. Now we're talking about, in a presidential election, 3.5 to 4 million ballots. We won't know who won New Jersey for weeks after the election.
It's crazy. And we've got some very competitive congressional races, as you know, Governor. And so, I look at that as, we've got a chance here maybe to capture the majority in the House. But if there's shenanigans going on, I also love these people, too, that say, oh, voter fraud is a myth, especially in a state like New Jersey, when Paterson, New Jersey, literally now the judges said they have to redo the election.
No, all you need to tell Democrats is that one of my great predecessors, the late Brendan Byrd, used to say all the time, as you know, that he used to make his wife, Ruthie, promise him that she would bury him in Hudson County when he died so that he could remain active in politics. The fact is, voter fraud has gone on in New Jersey for quite some time. The Democrats have been very good at it over the course of the decades. And let's face it, when you send that many ballots out there, not applications for ballots, but ballots, it's fraught with danger. And think about this. You remember just back to our primary in July, about a million voters voted between both primaries. And it took us 4 weeks to have Rick Maida declared the Republican nominee for the United States Senate. 4 weeks. Does that mean we will not know any of the congressional winners for 6 or 8 weeks afterwards? Because you're going to have at least three times, if not four times, the number of voters that we had in the primary voting in a presidential election. It is sophistry. It shows once again that they either don't understand or don't care or both.
Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie joins me, and I actually have a theory that Chris will be in New Hampshire in 2022 because there's going to be an open seat for the presidency in 2024. But I won't ask him about that today on the show. I just have a little theory on that. But I hope you don't rule that out, obviously. But what are your thoughts so far on the Republican National Convention? Obviously, the first night now is in the history books.
Well, I thought that last night Tim Scott really sent us off in a very good way. I've known Tim for a lot of years. He's one of the real, real good people in our party. And I think you could see it last night. His speech was not only substantively really good, pointing out the great things that the president has done over his 4 years in office, but also in a very, very smart way going after Joe Biden, not with a meat axe, but with a scalpel. And he cut Joe Biden's record apart and the record of his party. And he did it in a way that was so authentic. He sounded like the guy who had grown up poor in South Carolina. Sounded like the guy who, frankly admitted that he had failed out of college and had to try again. This is a guy who, put himself out there both personally and politically last night and did a really, really good job. And so I think Tim Scott did a fine job last night. And I think that we're going to hopefully look forward to similar type of performances as we work our way through to President Trump's speech on Thursday night.
You were obviously the first major political official in the country to back Trump in 2016. And he values your advice a lot, obviously, debate prep. And what advice would you give him now for his speech Thursday night? I mean, from my point of view, I think he's got to get very specific about what he wants to outline for his second term. Do you agree with that?
Yes, Rich, it has to be a substantive policy speech where he lays out exactly what he wants to do if the American people give him 4 more years. And the reason to do that is not because the American people are unsure about Donald Trump, but it is to force Joe Biden to start talking about his specifics. Because if you look at his speech last Thursday night, it was absolutely devoid of specifics. All they wanted to do last week was prove that Joe Biden is a good, decent human being. Okay, mission accomplished. I've known Joe Biden for 35 years. I think Joe Biden is a good and decent human being. But that does not mean he's ready to be president, qualified to be president, or that his ideas are ones that the mainstream of the American public want to see executed from the Oval Office. And so Donald Trump, we cannot run the race we ran in 2016. In 2016... we ran a slash and burn negative race almost exclusively because Hillary Clinton was among the most disliked major presidential candidates in recent American history. That is not the case with Joe Biden. The American people don't dislike Joe Biden. They don't distrust Joe Biden. And we shouldn't try to make them dislike or distrust him. What we have to say is he's a very nice man who's very wrong on the issues. And you know what I think it's really like, very much like George Bush 41 against Michael Dukakis in 1988. Michael Dukakis, no one thought Mike Dukakis was a bad person. But when you started to look at his record of, not requiring kids to do the Pledge of Allegiance, to having weekend passes, furloughs for violent criminals in prisons, increased taxes, increased spending. When George Bush 41 started to lay that out for the American people, they went, oh, listen, we can't have this guy as president. That's the kind of speech that Donald Trump should give on Thursday night. I hope he will give it, because if he does, that'll be his first step towards a victory on November 3rd.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you laid that out very, very well, Chris Christie. And that's the key right there, is giving people the kind of specifics and the forward-looking optimism. Because you're right. I mean, people don't hate Joe Biden. They feel sorry for Joe Biden, but they don't despise him. People hated Hillary Clinton with such passion and animosity. It's just that kind of thing you don't often see in politics. And we just have to remember that this is a very different election. I think you're dead on about that.
So you know, Rich, you've been involved in so many elections, and you know that the losing candidates are the ones who run the last election the next time. And for incumbents, and I saw this when I ran for re-election in 2013, the temptation is to talk exclusively about your record and what you've done. But the people who voted for you said, okay, well, that's what I got for voting for you the last time. What do I get for voting for you this time? You know, what are you promising me? What are you going to do if I give you four more years? And that's why, for an incumbent in particular, think about the really great incumbent presidential races with big victories. Ronald Reagan in 1984, Morning in America. You know, Bill Clinton in 1996, The Bridge to the 21st Century. You know, those were two during our lifetimes where the incumbents won sizable victories and ran a future-looking campaign. And so we need to see Donald Trump do the same thing. This cannot be a grievance speech. I thought too many of the speeches last night were too dark and angry. We don't need to do that. The American people see what's going on here. They see the violence in the streets. We don't have to beat them over the head with it. And they know that if they had to pick who's going to keep them safer, Donald Trump or Joe Biden, that Donald Trump's going to win that argument. We don't need to have, you know, too many more angry speeches the rest of the week about what's going on in the country. We need to have specific optimistic speeches about what Republican leadership will bring you in the next 4 years.
We need to have a couple of these speakers lay off the Red Bull, in my opinion.
Oh, you're not kidding, Rich. I know last night a number of them were just a little, a little bit too excited, especially when you're speaking to an empty room.
Right.
You know, I can understand when you're speaking in front of 20,000 roaring Republicans, how it gets your adrenaline going even a little bit more, and you might see someone get a little bit more excitable. But when you're speaking to literally an empty room, yelling and screaming, and I thought it was one of the things the Democrats actually did very well last week, was they adjusted the tenor and tone of their speeches to the fact that they were speaking to an empty room.
Yeah.
And I think they did that fairly well last week. I didn't agree with much of the content, but I agreed with the tone they took in terms of, you know, understanding that this is a whole different convention. There were some people last night who, yeah, you're exactly right, the best way to put it, you know, to get the Red Bull out of the green rooms. Right. Get everybody calmed down a little bit.
You know, the other thing, too, is that I was thinking, you said a couple months ago that Donald Trump is really running against the coronavirus. I mean, you had this when you ran for re-election. You had Sandy. You had Superstorm Sandy, and that was what a lot of people judged you on as you were running for re-election. How do you rate him so far in terms of that? And then what do you give him advice in terms of what he should do for the next couple months on this with regards to reassuring people, fighting for the economy to stay open, fighting for kids to go back to school? What should he be doing right now?
Well, I think a few things. First, in the campaign context, remind people of all the good things you have done. Remind people that there was insanity about there were going to be people who wouldn't have ventilators, who would be dying in hospitals for lack of ventilators, and now we're supplying ventilators to the entire world. Remind people that, you know, they said that frontline workers, healthcare workers, were going to be dying because of a lack of PPE, but that now there's no talk of a lack of PPE anywhere in America for public health workers. Those are all because of the steps the president took, that we are developing vaccines under Operation Warp Speed at a pace that is unprecedented in human history. And that's because the president made the commitment to do that. So first, you need to remind people the things you've done well. Second, to reassure people and say it's okay that everyone here needs to wear masks, to socially distance, to wash our hands, to do all the things that we need to do to try to slow the spread of the disease. Doesn't mean we can't go out. Doesn't mean that we can't be interacting with each other. Doesn't mean that we should not go back to work like we're doing here in New Jersey, where, you know, you still don't have indoor dining of any kind, where you don't have gyms open, where you don't have, you're killing, strangling small businesses. The president needs to be on the side of the small business man and woman to say, I am going to require the American people to do the things that need to be done so that you can reopen your businesses and not lose your livelihoods. And I think he needs to say to people very honestly that it's going to be a long haul until we get a vaccine. And that because of that, we've got to stick together. But I'm going to work as hard as I need to work to make sure that your lives every day take more steps towards normalcy. I remember after Sandy, I just said to our folks every day, don't promise things that we can't deliver. We have people who are mature, they're smart, they get it, they understand this is a real crisis. The way New Jerseyans understood Sandy was a crisis. They don't expect you to fix it overnight, but what they want you to be is honest, transparent, and to make progress, some progress, every day. That's the way the president should be talking about this. They don't expect him to wave a magic wand and make it miraculously go away. So let's not talk about that. Let's not say that, because it can't happen. But they expect you to be making progress every day. The president's made some real progress on this, and he needs to talk about that as well.
Yeah, well said. I agree with you on that point. I still remember when you said that the roller coaster from Seaside Heights was in the ocean, and that's that roller coaster that we went on as kids all the time, you know, and that log flume ride, which yep. I got great memories of being on that ride with my dad as a kid, you know, gone forever. And you said you recognized the reality. You didn't try to cover up the reality of the horrors that people were facing right there. Let me ask you, John Bon Jovi just bought a house in Florida, and a lot of people are getting out of New Jersey, but you know, I played Bruce Springsteen on the way in, Girls in Their Summer Clothes. Do you agree that's his best summer song?
It's not only his best summer song, but it is my wife's favorite Bruce Springsteen song of all time. So she was very happy to hear you playing that one on the way in. She's a big fan of Bruce's, as am I, but that is her favorite song.
And I did it for Mary Pat, so I'm glad that she noticed. So that's good.
Yeah, there you go, Rich. Good move.
See, I got some points right there. And, you know, absolutely. Bridget and I just celebrated our 12-year anniversary, and I have to say, as much as I make fun of Bruce Springsteen, and I do a lot, we did get married, and we danced to If I Should Fall Behind. So
great. One of the really great love songs that he's written as well. Good choice.
Yeah. Good stuff. What are we going to be playing in New Hampshire in 2022?
You know, I don't know, Rich, but I'll tell you this, and I've said this publicly, I don't rule that out at all. You can't try to predict what the political world in this country is going to look like in 2 weeks, let alone in 2 years. But I didn't name the book Let Me Finish by mistake. My book is about not only where my life is gone, but where my life may go from here. And, so I'm 57 years old. I'm certainly not ready. We've got two guys running for president right now that are 74 and 77. So I am hardly ready to give up the idea that there's a lot more left to contribute to this country. And I think we've learned a lot over the last 4 years about the race in 2016 and what happened in that race. And I think all of us are smarter today than we were back then, which is good. And, you know, I'm enjoying my time in the private sector, but there's nothing like, for me, being able to be involved at the highest levels of government, to be able to make more change and more of a difference in people's lives in one day than you often can make in other professions in a much longer period of time. So we'll see what the future brings. But I'll tell you this, in New Hampshire in 2022, I'm confident that there will be a lot of live free or dyers up there in New Hampshire who want to hear a vision for what the next 4 years are going to look like. And that'll be the challenge of anybody who decides to run for president in either party when we get to it. Because either way, I think we'll be looking at the end of an era. I think this will be the end of the baby boomers in national leadership. Donald Trump's second term or Joe Biden's first term will be the last that we'll see if a baby boomer is president. And it's going to be a new generation of leadership to take over permanently. Barack Obama had a little bit of an island in there of 8 years between George W. and Donald Trump. But this is going to be a generational change, a permanent generational change in 2024. So it'll be an exciting time for our country, and hopefully we make the right choice this time so that we're in the best position we possibly can be for our children and our grandchildren going forward.
Governor Chris Christie, always appreciate your time. I'll see you at debate prep, and we'll talk again soon. I really appreciate your time today. You've been very generous with it. Thank you.
Rich, listen, it's my pleasure. Love your show. And anytime you need me on over the course of the next 70 days, just you guys pick up the phone and call. I'm happy to talk.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.